I trust it will be an encouragement by the time we're finished today. It's going to start out with the same sad old song we've been singing throughout the book of Hosea. We're going to finish up the fourth cycle of Hosea's messages today. And the remainder of the book is the fifth cycle. By the cycle, I mean there is God's condemnation, his pronouncement of punishment to come, and a promise of restoration to follow. Marie and I are reading in the book of Jeremiah in our daily reading together, and we were noticing in a couple of the chapters that we were just reading a couple days ago, I think it was, that there's pronouncements against various nations at one point. Edom and Moab and a couple of others there. And at the there's a very short passage, part of a chapter, and at the end there's one verse, but one day they'll return. They will be blessed along. And each of those nations that were violent enemies of Israel and still are today, a lot of them, but one day God promises each of those nations there are going to be saved people from each of those nations. And there's a universal promise there to us, even from our nation and all the other nations. There will be someone saved. And that's what we're going to come to as we will complete this cycle today in Hosea chapter 11. If you would rise with me, I'm going to read the first part of what I'm going to cover today. And just read that together. And now, I'll caution you ahead of time, before I read, there are a couple of verses in here, one especially, that if we have six different versions in the room, they're all going to read a little differently. So please don't trip over that. And I will try to deal with it as we walk through the passage. So here goes. Hosea chapter 11, beginning with the first verse. When Israel was a child, I loved him. And out of Egypt I called my son. The more they were called, the more they went away. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and burning offerings to idols. Yet it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them up by their arms. But they did not know that I healed them. I led them with cords of kindness, with the bands of love. And I became to them as one who eases the yoke on their jaws, and I bent down to them and fed them. They shall not return to the land of Egypt, but Assyria shall be their king, because they have refused to return to me. The sword shall rage against their cities, consume the bars of their gates, and devour them because of their own counsels. My people are bent on turning away from me, and though they call out to the Most High, he shall not raise them up at all. You may be seated. You might have noticed in the first verse there a reference familiar to us from the New Testament. It's actually found in Matthew 2, verse 15. Out of Egypt I called my son. And who does that refer to in Matthew? To Jesus, right? And how does that work? Well, you remember Herod was on the attack. There's this new king, they say, coming up, and I got to do away with any competition. So he set out to hunt for them. The wise men came and said, come back and tell me where you find him. I want to go worship him too. Forked tongue. And an angel spoke to Joseph in the night and said, gather your little family, head for Egypt, because Herod wants to kill Jesus. They went down to Egypt. He said, you stay there until I tell you it's safe to come back. When Herod died, the angel spoke to Joseph. Okay, it's time. Head back to Israel. and out of Egypt God called his son, Jesus. Jesus is the ultimate fulfillment of this. Here in our passage, it's going to be, it's referring to Israel, of course. Before I proceed, I always like to start with a prayer, my own here. So if you would pray with me. Father, I want to commit the remaining time today into your hands for your glory, for your honor, and myself into your hands as well. Help us, Father, to see you better, even to see Jesus and the great saving that is yet to come for all peoples, those who turn to you. Thank you for this day, for each one here, for those watching online. Father, we belong to you. Our attention in this special hour of gathering together belongs to you. Help us in our focus to see you in your great work and your great sovereignty and grace, mercy. Thank you for this time. We praise you in Jesus' name. Amen. When Israel was a child, I loved him. This is God speaking right here. And he's indicating that when, from the very beginnings of Israel, when Israel was being formed as a nation, even back, you could go back to Abraham, but Jacob and his sons, especially, and beyond that, when he was a child, when he was a very young nation, God says he loved them. He loved them back then. And I, out of Egypt, I called my son. In other words, out of Egypt, I called my son. How does that apply to Israel? Well, we have to go back to Moses and the Exodus to get that full, when that was fulfilled. Out of Egypt. Remember, they were in captivity in Egypt. They were enslaved there. They had gone there for the freedom under Joseph's tutelage there earlier. But by the time they left Egypt, they were abject slaves. They were being used and abused horribly by the Egyptians. But when they went, remember how the Egyptians treated them when they left? Go, go. Here, you want my clothes? You want my jewels? Take it, go, just go. Get out of Egypt. We're all gonna die if they don't get out of here. And they left. Moses led them out. God says he called them out of Egypt. This wasn't the work of Moses. This wasn't the work of the Egyptians or, you know, anybody else. God overseeingly, you know, he raises up nations, he brings down nations. He was the one orchestrating all of that. He called them out of Egypt. Did they listen to that call that time? Uh-huh, they did. Oh, good, let's go. And off they went to the promised land. But verse 2 is a contradiction then. The more they were called, which God kept calling them, come to me, come to me, come to me. Throughout their history, God was calling them. The more they went away. The more they were called by God through the prophets. Remember the prophets over and over again. If you read through the prophets, we're in one of the minor ones now, but you read through the prophets. Continuously through those prophets, God is pleading with them. Turn to me. Return to me. Put away the idols. I will save you. I will bless you. And Israel's answer was what he says right here. The more they were called, the more they said, "Eh, I don't think so. I'm going that way." The other way, away from God. That was the tendency of sinful man, sinful Israel. And God specially is calling Israel. He is their special ambassador to the rest of the world. He wants to prepare them to be his priests, nation of priests to the rest of the world, the go-between between God and the rest of mankind, Gentiles. They went away. They turned their back on God. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and burning offerings to idols. Just kept at it, kept turning back to those false gods, idols. And if you, some of the notes I was looking at by one of the authors pointed back to Judges for the perfect picture of this. And he points to chapter 2. I'm not going to go there right now, but you can just make a note of that. And check out chapter 2 of Judges. You see the latter part of that chapter. He shows the cycle. It's a cycle in Judges. Over and over and over. They would sin. They would worship Baal and other idols. And then some foreign nation would come in and dominate them. And they would finally, oh Lord, relief, please save us. God would send a judge. And that judge would rally the troops. And they'd drive out the enemy. And God would save them. Yay, everything's back to normal. Back to good times. Ah, we can relax now. Let's see, where's that idol I put away? They'd dig it out again. And go back to worshiping idols again. And it's over and over and over. And that is demonstrated or expressed very clearly there in Judges chapter 2. Bearing offerings to idols. They just kept it up. And God goes on to defend his position. What he has done for them. In the next couple of verses here. Verses 3 and 4. Yet it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. How to live. How to live the godly life. How to live the kind of life that God wanted them to live. God taught them that. How? Through the law and through the prophets. Continually the instruction was there. I took them up by their arms. In other words, he carried them along, as it were. But they did not know that I healed them when they needed healing. You know, I think of this often. It comes to my mind. When you're wounded, okay, Bonnie just had some surgery just lately here, and she's healing up nicely from it. Is that just because she had a magic surgeon? Nope. The surgeon did what he could do to correct the problem that she had. But the healing, that's from God. God is the one who heals us. I often think, what if we wouldn't heal? I probably mentioned this before. It's a favorite topic of mine. I had my leg broken a number of years ago. It's all healed up, and I've done a lot of heavy work since then. How did that happen? It wasn't by anything special I did. I took care, but I waited on the Lord to do his healing work. And I think it behooves us to recognize they did not know that I healed them. They did not acknowledge God's healing for them. When the snakes bit them, when scorpions stung them, whatever, when they were hungry, when they were thirsty, God took care of them. And he goes on about the food here. He says, I led them with cords of kindness or humaneness. God was kind to Israel. You know, when they first turned to the Baals, he could have said, like he threatened to Moses, to see what Moses' reaction would be, let me stand aside, Moses, let me wipe them out. I'll start over with you. Moses said, oh, no, don't do that. Your reputation is at stake. People will say, you brought them out here to just kill them, or you failed to save them in some way. And Moses pled with God. God had Moses' heart, and Moses even said at one point, wipe me out, kill me, but don't wipe out your people. Don't kill them. And God said, okay, I won't. But, and he laid down the law for them. But the law was not, you do this or I'm going to beat you. It was, this is for your good. The approach of the law was, this is for your good. This is how you will survive and thrive and be greatly blessed. I led them with cords of kindness, with the bands of love. I became to them as one who eases the yoke on their jaws. And I bent down to them and fed them. Easing the yoke on their jaws. I always thought the yokes around the shoulders. Well, one commentator that I was looking at said that a cattleman, someone who had cattle, would take the yoke off of the cattle when they went to eat. How does a cow eat? They bend their head down, right? And that yoke could slip down, get in their way, trying to eat their food. And they, one who really cared for his livestock would take the yoke off of them for their eating to make it easier for them to eat their food so they could actually get their nourishment. God says, This is the way I treated you. I eased the yoke from their jaws so they could eat. I bent down to them and fed them. And you think about their being brought out of Egypt. They had a yoke there, didn't they? A great yoke of slavery in Egypt. But he lifted it and fed them. Fed them in the wilderness when they got hungry. The next three verses refer to the punishment being pronounced once again. So there's the accusation, the condemnation in those first verses, along with God's defense of what he has done. Verses 5 through 7, therefore, consequences, judgment. They shall not return to the land of Egypt, but Assyria shall be their king, because they have refused to return to me. Now, we've already referred to the return to Egypt a couple of times earlier, back in chapter 9, verse 3, especially, and back before that in chapter 8, verse 13, where God said specifically, let me go back to that verse 13 of chapter 8, as for my sacrificial offerings, they sacrifice meat and eat it, but the Lord does not accept them. Now he will remember their iniquity and punish their sins. They shall return to Egypt. Whoa. He's going to punish them by sending them back to Egyptian slavery? And I mentioned at that time, actually it's Assyria. Chapter 9, verse 3. They shall not remain in the land of the Lord, but Ephraim shall return to Egypt, and they shall eat unclean food in Assyria. And there's the hint that Egypt is just a metaphor for Assyria. A metaphor in that the experience they had in Egypt under slavery, all the torture and torment, and probably didn't even get as much food as they thought later they had. It was a very troublesome time for them in Egypt. But here's the hint. They shall eat unclean food in Assyria. And now we have it spelled out in no uncertain terms when we come to chapter 11, verse 5. They shall not return to Egypt. There is some quibble in the Hebrew. Some of your versions may say, they shall surely return to Egypt. But the next line clinches it where they're really headed. But Assyria shall be their king. Their king. Who is supposed to be their king with a capital K? God was. They were to be attentive to God as their ultimate ruler. They rejected God, so he's going to give them the Assyrian king. Oh, joy. That's a great replacement. And why? Because they have refused to return to me. Is God patient? Or is he kind of short on pace, short-tempered? Very patient. Over and over. Generation after generation. Century after century. The sword shall rage against their cities, verse 6, consume the bars of their gates, and devour them because of their own counsels. The sword, the enemy's coming in to destroy them. Consume the bars of their gates. Some versions have it, the sword's going to swirl around their cities, something like that. They're going to surround and destroy all around the city, and ultimately they're going to break the bars. The bars of the gate were what protected against the enemy breaking in, the enemy getting in. They're going to be able to, these enemies are going to be powerful enough to break those bars even, break right into the cities and devour them. The word for destroy them, because of their own counsels. What's that talking about? False prophets? False priests or priests, whatever, they're telling the people, oh, it's going to be fine, it's going to be fine. Assyria's going to go away, everything will be fine, just relax. And it wasn't so. You remember Jeremiah? He got thrown into a waterless cistern with mud in the bottom of it because he said, you guys are false prophets. Thus saith the Lord, you are going into captivity. And the people got mad at him. They'd rather listen to the more comfortable speech everything's going to be fine. Not so. Because of their own counsels, they listened rather to the false prophets than to the true prophets, who tried to tell them what they really needed to do. Verse 7, my people are bent on turning away from me. There's the same thing again, this idea of constantly turning away, turning away. And though they call out, this is the verse that is so different in different versions. I didn't check CSB, Chuck, so I'd be interested to see that later. My people are bent on turning away from me. Though they call out to the Most High, He shall not raise them up at all. And I'm not going to pontificate on what I believe is the absolutely right understanding of this verse. The first part is essentially the same in most of the versions. My people are bent on turning away from me. That is their bent. That is their tendency to reject God, to turn away, to reject the law, to say, no, we want to do it our own way. Though they call out to the Most High, He shall not raise them up at all. That last line especially, I think, is better understood as they do not at all exalt God. They do not exalt me. I know we've got NIV and King James and New King James, ESV, NASB. I checked them all and some more. He shall not raise them up. Both statements are true, biblically, contextually. You can go with either one. You're not going to destroy any good sound theology. He shall not raise them up. In other words, God is not going to keep them from going into this punishment. When a child disobeys a parent, and you say, if you do that again, I'm going to throw you out the window. And they do it again. Dare ya, mom, dad, whoever, I dare ya. And you don't throw them out the window, you just threaten, if you do that again, I'm going to whip ya, or something. And you never follow through. We have the situation in America today. We have laws in the books, and people are just disobeying them right and left because nobody's ever going to do anything. We can get away with it. That's what I think we're looking at here a bit. My people are bent on turning away from me, though they call out to the Most High, though the priests call out or the people call, though they say, oh Lord God, save us. He says, He shall not raise them up at all. He's not going to exalt them. They do not exalt Him. That's the other alternative wording there. That they don't exalt Him at all. Or He will not shall not raise them up at all. God is not going to lift them, save them, deliver them out of the punishment that is coming. They will have to suffer the punishment. I'll come back to my childhood, child illustration there. If you follow through with the punishment that you threaten, if you threaten, you'd better follow through. Don't throw them out the window. Yeah, no. Threaten something you can keep, and you know will be good for them, and then do it when they do it again. And then you may have to do it more than once. If you have I'm really taking off here now, stubborn-willed child. Israel is a stubborn-willed son of God. He is their beloved son. But they're stubbornly saying, nope. He shall not raise them up at all. Boy, that sounds pretty final, doesn't it? Sounds like, oh boy, the end. Nothing to look forward to but the end. Might as well eat worms and die. The next verses turns the page. Restoration. Ultimate restoration is in line. Verses 8 through 11. Here's the heart of God. One author actually words it this way. He says, these verses are like a window into the heart of God. They show that His love for His people will never let them go. If you love your child and they disobey and you punish them, it doesn't mean you've stopped loving them, does it? You punish them hoping that they will correct. They will come back. And you will love them. You will care for them just like before. God says, verse 8, how can I give you up, O Ephraim? How can I hand you over, O Israel? Two ways of saying the same thing. Synonymous statements there. How can I make you like Adma? How can I treat you like Zeboiim? Where did those come from? Those were cities in the same area as Sodom and Gomorrah. They suffered the same destruction as Sodom and Gomorrah. When he mentions Adma and Zeboiim here, it's calling to mind their memory. They would remember those cities in that area were turned to cinder blocks. They were totally wiped out, destroyed. And God saying, how could I possibly treat you like that, Israel? To just utterly, absolutely finish you off, destroy you. How could I do that? Remember how it started? When Israel was not a child, I loved him. Out of Egypt, I called my son. He goes on and on about how he cared in great love for them and kindness. He's not going to throw them away. My heart recoils within me. My compassion grows warm and tender. With the emotional heights of God's wrath against them, it's now changed to emotional heights of compassion for his people. And I almost see this as God's compassion overriding his wrath against their sinfulness, clearly sinfulness and disobedience that they deserved. But he said, my compassion is going to step in here. This is where God is different from human beings. We might go off the deep end and say, you're so rotten. Zap. You are finished, like Adma and Zeboiim and Sodom and Gomorrah. And then he goes on to say what God says he will do. Verse 9, I will not execute my burning anger. I will not again destroy Ephraim. They're going to be destroyed as a nation. They're going to be scattered. They're going to be sent off to enemy nations where they will suffer. But I will not again do it. There's a hint that Ephraim is going to survive. And God's not going to put them under that kind of a destruction again. For I am God and not a man. God doesn't act like human beings typically would act. We think in great justified righteousness, you know, we can pronounce, we know what to do, what the right thing to do is. God knows absolutely what the right thing to do is, what the just thing to do is, what the fair thing to do is when it comes to judgment and when it comes to restoration as well. I will not again destroy Ephraim, for I am God and not a man, the Holy One in your midst, and I will not come in wrath. Some of your translations, I think, say into the city. But I think in wrath there is maybe a better understanding of it. The Holy One. What does holiness mean? Separation from evil. God is separate. He is other than human. He is not like us. He's like us in some ways. We are like him in some ways. We have certain capacities that God has given us that are also his capacities. We have a capacity for holiness, but sin in us keeps us from the absolute holiness that God has. The Holy One in your midst, I will not come in wrath, indicating I will not again destroy Ephraim, not in wrath like that. Verse 10, they shall go after the Lord. He will roar like a lion. When he roars, his children shall come trembling from the west. They shall come trembling like birds from Egypt, like doves from the land of Assyria, and I will return them to their homes, declares the Lord. Full stop. Verse 12 belongs with chapter 12. This is where those who decided where the chapters and verses ought to be kind of messed it up. Verse 12 definitely turns the page back to condemnation again. So just discount that. End this chapter with verse 11. They shall come trembling. They shall go after the Lord. They're going, you know, the bent of Israel here, God has said, what was their bent, their tendency? To go away, to reject God, to turn their back, go away, away, away from God. Verse 10 says, they shall go after the Lord. Why? Well, remember the passage that Chuck read earlier from Jeremiah? God's going to write his law or his instructions on their heart. Their heart is going to be changed. Changed completely. No more sin. That's what we have to look forward to. I doubt if there's a person in this room who would say, nope, I don't have any sin anymore. I think you're fooling yourself if you're going to take that position. But we can talk about that later. They shall go after the Lord. He will roar like a lion. When God roared earlier, it's with his wrath, his destructive wrath. This roar is going to be, come, my children, come to me. And they're going to say, yes, yes. They're going to come trembling like birds. What's that trembling come from? We are guilty. We deserve the punishment. He's mercifully calling us back to himself, trembling like birds from Egypt. Earlier it said something about them being silly doves, you know, going off their own ways. Here he's still using that bird metaphor, but now it's birds flying back to God. And notice it says from Egypt and from Assyria. They're apparently scattered all over. Where does it say here? There it was. The end of verse 10. His children shall come trembling from the west. Now, if you're kind of familiar with your Bible map, where is Assyria with relationship to Israel? Here's Israel. Assyria is over here to the north and east. That's Assyria trembling from the west. In the other direction. This appears to be pointing to a future scattering of Israel. We know they went into captivity to Assyria. Assyria was overrun later by Babylon, and then came in the Medes and Persians, and God said to the survivors from Judah, okay, you can go back home now. They went back home then. This appears to be pointing to a future dispersion. Where are the Jews today? Just about name a country, there are probably some Jews there. And I've heard that there are more Jews, I'm thinking about this, maybe you can remind me, one of you guys, more Jews in America than there are in Israel. And Israel has grown quite a bit of Jews that have returned to Israel. But it said that there are more in our own country today than there are in Israel. They're scattered everywhere. God's going to regather his people specially to Jerusalem. I think in just they're going to come from Egypt, they're going to come from Assyria, and as Marie and I were reading in Jeremiah, you guys can check that out, you come to where the headings, judgment against Edom, judgment against Egypt, Moab, yeah, and several other countries there. And that promise is there at the end, that there will be a restoration, there will be a remnant return to him one day. That's what he's pointing to, I think. This is the final restoration of all of God's people. It's Israel. This is focused on Israel. I don't want to take away from that. But because of the new covenant that Chuck read about, because of Jesus fulfilling, you know, putting into action, the new covenant in the New Testament, you and I can be included as well. They shall come trembling like birds from Egypt, like doves from the land of Assyria, and I will return them to their homes. That's specific to Israel. Where is their home? It's in the land of Israel, especially. They're going to get their land back. And it's going to be according to God's covenant from the beginning. It's going to be much larger. Read the end chapters of Ezekiel. Much larger than it ever has been historically. I will return them to their homes, declares the Lord. That Chuck was reading earlier. Thus saith the Lord through Hosea to his people. There's the promise. And I believe this promise does apply to us as believers. When we have turned to God, and today it's turning specifically to Jesus the Christ, the Messiah. Israel still needs to recognize that their Messiah has come. I've heard that there are Jewish people, soldiers even, that are coming to recognize Jesus as he's the Christ and becoming Christians, even today, more and more. That's our job. That's our assignment while we are here. When God saved us, he could have just snatched us off to heaven. Remember Enoch back there in Genesis? He lived way shorter lifetime than most of the other guys who were living closer to 1,000 years. He only lived, what, 300 and something? Something like that? 360, 65, something like that. And he was not, because God took him. He took him home to heaven. Heaven home. His presence. God's presence. That's what we have to look forward to, and that's what we need to be sharing with others. And in light of that, we will move on to the communion from this point. That last song will be after, right? Yes. And if I could have maybe Jerry and if you wouldn't mind, or Chuck, would you mind? Chuck and Skip, would you mind being my helpers to serve communion up here? And we just, there's a saying, the ministry council told me when I shared this little saying with them a while back. This has been, go ahead, you can cut now. Some time back, that it was a little saying I got from Jan Markell, something that she's often ended her little